recording this session. Must remember to do that. Hi Natalia, glad you can join us from across the water. I think I'm still on North American time after a recent trip to Canada. Having trouble adjusting to the time zones. But it's just 8 o'clock now. We've got how many? 15, 16 or so. So hoping the rest will join us if they can. But we'll get started anyways. So I did mention in the message I sent out, my suggestion was for us to make, and this was also taking on board some of the feedback that some of you sent me after the last one, suggestion was to make the best use of the time that we have and also the working with the limitations of the technology. I found it, let's say, challenging to juggle the rapidly streaming text questions and comments and so forth, and to kind of maintain a flow at the same time. So this time my suggestion was that if you can send things in ahead of time, which some of you have done, thanks for that, which is great, and I can kind of incorporate those, address those points together with some other things that I wanted to share with you in the first part of the webinar. And the good news for you guys, your job at this stage, just to be quiet and just to let it be a kind of time to refresh and review and just get back in the energy of what it is we're working with. And then at the probably halfway point or thereabouts, we can open it up for interaction, discussion, further questions and so forth. So let's try it that way this time. I hope it works for you. And it means at least that I can kind of work through something more sequentially rather than chopping and changing as things pop up on the screen. Obviously, if anyone has any technical difficulties, you can let us know, and Debbie or I will try and address those. That's absolutely fine. But otherwise, stay on board. I won't do anything fancy with the equipment. My broadband speed is a bit sluggish at the moment, so I'm keeping the video off for now. I'm just going to use audio. So you can also tune out the visual sense for the moment, and I'll do the same. Now, one of the topics that's been coming up for a few of you, I don't know exactly how many, but I know definitely a few of you from some of the feedback that's coming, is absolutely an expected topic, and that's to do with, am I getting this, or am I missing something? Or I'm sure everybody else is getting it, but I'm not. Or I think I'm getting it, and then as soon as I think I've got it, I seem to lose it again. And this might be a theme that some of you can relate to. And let's first of all say it's absolutely normal. That seems to be the way of this. The very nature of what we're talking about is something that's so, on the one hand, so blindingly obvious that we can't see it. And on the other hand, it's a subtle shift that we're talking about, and it's not something that you come to through the normal mode that we're used to using, through analysis, through working through things in your head and drawing some kind of conclusion, and also through comparing this to things that you already know, seeing how it fits, seeing whether you agree or you don't agree. None of those modes seem to work. Not that that stops us trying them, but I know from my own experience, some of you will be finding out from your experience, that it just doesn't work. This is not something you can really satisfactorily get your head around. And yet, it is something that can, let's say, slip past the radar and creep up on us, often in unexpected ways. And the way that it does come to you when it does is more in the way of a realization or an insight of some kind, what you would call a kind of aha realization. And for some people that's a big thing, you know, it hits you like a ton of bricks, so to speak. But for others it's not like that at all. You only start to notice that your responses have changed, for example, after the event, after it's actually happened. You realize you're not getting caught in the same way as you were, or you realize that the arguments that used to last an hour only last 5 minutes, or that person that used to wind you up seems to have lost the ability to do that, or things of this kind, where it's like the wrinkles of your life start to get ironed out seemingly by themselves. This is one of the side effects, that it's starting to sink in. But there are others which we'll talk about in a little bit. But the first thing I just want to reiterate, it's not an intellectual understanding, this, even though the first weekend was very much presenting the material as a kind of something, as a new concept, as a new understanding. In order for it to have any value, it's something that we have to let go of understanding. This is the paradox. The more you try and get it, the more it will slip through your fingers. That's very much the nature of it. What we're referring to, bear in mind, is literally how we create our own personal experience of life, which then shows up in our life as reality. It has all the look and all the feel of reality. So it's something that we're so used to, because we've been doing this every moment of our life since the day we were born. We've been literally creating our own experience of life by taking perceptual data in through the senses and then running every experience that we encounter through this filter, which is called thought, and allowing ourselves to be then affected, not directly by the events, but by our interpretation of the events, or by our, let's say, our judgments about it, whether we like it or don't like it. These kind of things color in quite profound ways our experience of life. So we're kind of getting life through this filter without knowing it. So it's not that we're learning to do anything different. We're not learning a technique here. What we're learning is to become aware of something that we've always been doing. And that's a surprisingly difficult thing to do. It's like becoming aware of the fact that you digest food or something of that kind. You say, well, I've always done that, and I do it whether I try to do it or not. Well, this is like that. We all do this whether we try to do it or not. So we're trying to bring awareness to something which has been happening, and you could say has been organizing our experience of life. We're just trying to bring awareness to that so that we actually notice the ways in which we color and shape and literally make our experience. And this is not something that, let's say, I won't say any of us have done, but it's not something that most of us have done, at least consistently. I think that many of you will have had occasions, glimpses, maybe even long periods, when you've really felt that to be the case. You've really been able to see the quite direct connections between what was showing up on the outside and what was happening for you on the inside. Or the direct relationship between, let's say, what you've been thinking, what kind of mood you've gotten into, and then how you end up feeling subsequently without anything on the outside having changed. Just sending a message here to Gulnaz. She's telling me she's forgotten the password. So let's help her to get in. Okay, well, that works for her. So that's the first thing there, is to just to keep in mind that it's an act of noticing. It's a becoming aware of something which has always been there. It's not even that we're learning anything new. The other part of it, of course, is that the feedback from the body is what tells us in real time what kind or type, or you could say quality, of thinking we're filtering our life experience through. And given that the speed and the number of thoughts that we have is bewildering, there's no way we can keep track of our thinking. But the beauty of it is what we can notice is how we're feeling. We can notice our degree of at least comfort or discomfort, ease or unease, inner calm or inner disturbance. This is one of the, let's say, the allies that we have in terms of bringing this whole process into our awareness, is starting to listen to the body much more closely, and also to really trust it, to trust that its feedback is reliable and consistent. If we kind of only trust it a little bit, or only some of the time, or only when it suits us, it's not really going to be able to inform us in a consistent and accurate way. So my recommendation is really take a kind of leap of faith with the feedback from the body. Just Let it be the truth teller that it is, and take it as being true, let's be speaking the truth. If there's some tension, discomfort, anxiety, fear, anger, whatever it is coursing through your body, let that be feedback that something in the thought filter is creating a disturbance. The other kind of basic presumption we could make is that, and we know this from our own experience, whenever the mind is clear of thoughts to some extent, or you're in a calm, peaceful state of mind, then you experience that corresponding feeling. You experience a feeling of calm. And the problem is that most of us attribute that to doing certain things, like doing a practice of some kind, say a meditation practice or having a walk and so on. And it's not to say those things can't help, they can. But what we miss is that we miss the point that the activity, if it's helpful at all, what it helps is just for the mind to quiet down a little bit. A bit like the athlete going into the zone. And it's not something that they can make happen, but it's something that they noticed happen. And what's happening there is the mind quietens, so the harmony, shall we say, comes into the body as a result of that. So it's not directly as a result of the activity. It often looks that way, but it isn't. It's a result of the mind just taking a little breather, and the thoughts just settling down. And a lot of practices, the way that they enable this to happen is they just have us concentrate on one thing. So just by that action of deliberately concentrating down onto one thing, it helps just to still a lot of the chatter. And that's partly what I'm attempting here by encouraging you just to stay clear of the text chat for a little while and just listen for a little bit with open ears. We're attempting the same thing here, just to quieten the chatter of the mind a little bit and let ourselves settle. If the mind is not entirely clear, but our thinking is nonetheless positive, accepting, loving, optimistic, trusting, if our thinking is of that kind of nature, you could say that we're in alignment with what's true, then that kind of thinking will generate only positive feelings for us. We'll have corresponding feelings again of trust and calm and compassion. It's impossible to have that any other way. You're not going to generate feelings of distress or upset from a place of calm, quiet thoughts. It's just not possible. So you can quite easily test that from your own experience. The flip side of that, of course, when our thinking gets caught in a cycle of negativity, we become cynical or overly critical or judgmental, blaming others or ourselves, fearful, angry, whatever it is in our thoughts. When we get caught in that thinking, remember, the act of having the thought itself is not a problem. It's when we get caught in our thinking, when we start to hook onto it and we add more and more story to it. And you could say even when we believe our thoughts, that they become problematic. So we have lots of thoughts which just pass through. They're no problem at all. But when we attach meaning and importance to them and we start believing them and then we start behaving as if they're true, this is when we get into a vicious cycle. And our feeling state starts to go downhill from that point on. And you'll know from your own experience that you can get into a kind of cycle where it seems everything you touch just breaks, or everything seems to be going wrong today. And as the more that your mood darkens, the more the outside world also seems to reflect that. So there is also this extra feedback dimension, which is our immediate environment. The people and events that are showing up in our life moment by moment. A lot of it looks random and it looks like it's happening just out there or happening in some way to us. And yet you do start to notice as you pay closer attention that there is a kind of correspondence between the sorts of things that tend to show up, the kinds of patterns of experience that tend to appear in your life, and again what's happening on your internal world. Okay, so we could say that's a byproduct of our thinking and feeling, is what's showing up outside. Now, when you start to make this kind of connection, the most, let's say, common and frequent question the mind comes up with is, well, if that's the way we're set up, we're experiencing the world through this filter of thought and feeling, all we need to do is change our thoughts, surely. We just need to change the negative ones into the positive. Well, we can do that, and there are some great techniques around that help us to do exactly that. I practiced EFT for many years, and I still use it on occasion, the emotional freedom technique. It struck me when I came across it as a great technique. It's still a great technique. What I've come to understand about it is that, like many similar techniques, what it's helping us to do is to bring into awareness our judgmental or negative thinking and to simply neutralize it with positive, loving, accepting thinking, and to literally tap that into the body. It uses a tapping technique. I'm using the acupuncture meridians. Personally, I think that part of it is perhaps secondary, but for me the key part of the EFT is what they call the setup phrase. We talk about, even though I have this problem, this issue, whatever it is, I deeply and completely accept myself. And I noticed when I was practicing EFT, that phrase alone would often do it. That would be enough just to break the spiral of negativity. Because what we're doing is just bringing loving acceptance to yourself. And you're not waiting for the problem to change before you do that. So you're saying, even though I have this problem, even though I have this issue, and even though I can't solve it, I'm choosing to accept myself anyway. And the people that developed EFT, they actually tested lots of phrases, literally by using kinesiology. They tested them on the body to see the effect. And that phrase of deeply and completely accept myself seemed to have the most universally calming and healing effect. And that should be no surprise when we start to understand this a bit better. You can actually see now how a technique like EFT can be so useful. It's just bringing a universal loving acceptance to any judgmental thought, and the corresponding painful feeling. So it's helping me to have a deeper understanding of why something so simple can have very profound healing effects. And I've seen that with EFT. It can be the benefits can be completely out of proportion to the simplicity of the method. And we've got other techniques that we know about, things like Byron Katie work, which I've mentioned already, if you're not familiar with it, which is using simple question and answer procedure to undermine thought patterns and beliefs which are creating stress, which are creating negativity of some kind, creating hurt, creating bitterness or anger or resentment. And again, it's a useful technique, it's relatively quick, works beautifully. So it is possible, you know, if your mind has that question, well, can we not just identify the, you know, whatever the negative thought pattern is and change it? Yes, you can. We've got some tools for that. And in some of the weekends, if you want, if you're not familiar with those, or even if you are, if you have specific things that seem to be in the way and you want me to help you work them through using one of these techniques or teaching you how to do it for yourself, I'm more than happy to do that. And, I was going to say however, but and even though these things are helpful, what you start to find, what I started to find over a number of quite a few years of using them, is that it's endless. Is that the personal mind has an infinite capacity to come up with new negative thoughts, or maybe recycle the old ones and apply them to a different area of life. And this is what I think this is the place where the work that we're doing here has the potential to take you further than that. Because rather than having to identify and work with each particular issue, which, all okay, it's fine, it works on its own level and you can resolve a lot of issues that way, but you're doing it kind of one at a time. The potential here is to, you're working with what I call the nickname the master key, It's that if you've got the master key, it's something that when you shift it at this level, it ripples out to lots and lots of areas of your life. And frequently it's the ones that you hadn't even been paying attention to. You hadn't been doing any work on. That's what was so intriguing to me about this, was that how's that possible? How can areas of your life that you haven't even attended to yet, but you knew were problematic, how can they start ironing themselves out, so to speak? And it's because of this shift in perception of, which comes out of the understanding of how you're actually creating your own experience of life. It seems that when we start to really get that, when we start to really see it for ourselves, that seeing in itself changes the way that we do it. We automatically start aligning ourselves with something which feels better, something which is, let's say, truer, is more truthful and is more in harmony with the truth of who we are. That's just an automatic side effect. It's not something that we have to work out. It's not something that we have to coerce or force into happening. So that's the potential for this, is that we can send out positive ripples to areas of our life without necessarily having to work on them. That's why I like it. It's highly efficient once it starts to seep into your consciousness. It occurred to me as I was driving home today, I was messing with the radio, and there's a couple of places where, as I'm driving along, the radio's clear, 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 and there's a couple of places where it suddenly goes very crackly and distorted. And the thought popped into my mind, it's like, ah, that's what it's like with the energy of mind. When we talk about the three principles of mind, consciousness and thought, and remember, mind is the term used for, just to denote the intelligence behind life. So it's the energy that's pulsing out, creating this wonderfully intelligent, beautiful universe, including our planet and including ourselves and everything that comes out of that. So that energy, let's say, is that's the broadcasting station that's sending out all these signals. And they're always clear and perfect when they come out. And if we are not putting anything in the way, then the signal, when we receive it, is clear and perfect too. That's what occurred to me. And it's only when what we experience instead is some interference, when there's interference in the way, and in the case of us humans, it takes the form of negative thinking of some kind, where we get caught in some thought pattern, that interference distorts the signal. So it seems like the signal's no longer clear. It seems like we're getting something negative coming from the outside world, coming from somewhere else. But actually, it's the same signal. It's the same beautiful, crystal clear signal is still being broadcast as it always was. It hasn't changed at all. The only thing that's changed is that the filter now, it's going through a filter which is creating distortion. So it's exactly the same as effect as I experienced on the road when I go under a certain power cable or through a bridge, a tunnel or something like that. Suddenly, what was a moment ago clear and calm music or whatever I was listening to, now it's all crackling and disturbing and starts to upset me and I want to turn it off. But it's the same signal. Now this is it's just an analogy, it's a metaphor, but it's important to keep in mind that the world as it is not what we need to be changing. It just looks like that. And it looks like that because of the distortion in our own perception. It seems then, when we look out from that place of distorted perception, it looks like the world needs fixing. It looks like there's all kinds of things wrong with the people in our life, with the life situation, with the circumstances. That's the way it starts to show up. But the moment our perception is, let's say, cleared, is corrected, that same situation suddenly seems okay. And that same person who was intolerable for some reason or other suddenly seems to show up differently to us. So this is a radical approach when you really think about it. And what it's edging us towards is a place of 100% self-responsibility for our life. To be able to actually own up to the fact that Yeah, we are self-responsible. We're responsible for creating 100% of our experience of life. That doesn't mean to say we're responsible for the creation of the universe or the fact that people fight with each other in our neighbourhood and so on. Of course, there are all kinds of things happening around us, but how we experience it and then consequently how we respond to it, that's all been generated from within us. That's not been dictated from outside. And therefore, there's nothing outside that we have to put energy into fixing in order that we can be okay. So when we're not putting anything in the way, the signal's always good. That's that may be a good thing to keep in mind. The signal's always good. It's consistent, it's clear, it's loving, and it's available to us. This is the amazing thing about this this work, is that there's nobody is excluded. It's not dependent on you having a certain level of IQ or emotional intelligence or anything at all. There's no prerequisite, because we're all a part of this. We're all receiving the same pulse of life, the same, which is fueled by the same divine intelligence. There's not one person on this planet who's separate from that, who's independent from that. I think it was Sid Banks who used to say, you're only one thought away from perfect mental health. And he would say that to people who'd been diagnosed with all kinds of so-called mental health problems. And he was quite clear about that. He said, no, you're still only one thought away. Just one other thing on this is that getting clear on the inside, when I say by getting clear, I mean being able to bring yourself or allow yourself to settle to a place where your thinking is relatively calm, or at least is not so distorted, let's say that. So you've allowed it to settle a little bit, or you're not getting hooked by your thinking, even if it's still happening. You're not getting hooked to the same degree. So getting clear on the inside, at least just a little window of clarity, and having the corresponding calm in your system, in your body, I would say is a prerequisite for any kind of important decision making that needs to happen or action that needs to be taken on the outside. In other words, if there's something that you feel needs to be decided on, and there's a life decision to be taken or a change that maybe needs to be made, you're going to do it much more effectively, more efficiently, and probably more cleanly and truthfully when you do it from a place of clarity and inner peace. And I don't think there's any argument about that. You'll know that from your own experience. We don't do the best job, we don't perform the best, and we don't make the best decisions from a place of emotional turmoil. It's simply not possible. And yet, what we so frequently do, because we don't quite grasp this understanding fully, what we try and do is when we're feeling disturbed, we're feeling upset by something in our life, it's almost like the default setting that we've been conditioned to have is to try and fix it on the outside. So we try and get other people to behave differently. We change around a relationship or a living situation or a job situation, or we try and earn more money or transform our finances, again on the outside, without having reach that place of clarity on the inside. And that will always be a struggle, because we're approaching it backwards way around. I'm not saying that we can't achieve it nonetheless, but let's say it's the less efficient route, and it generally tends to create further problems which we hadn't intended. And just one other thing on this before we open it up. Sometimes the kind of pattern of negativity or the cycle of negativity we get caught in is that we're resisting something or opposing something or judging something or someone which is outside of us. And that's common enough. You know, if only they would stop then I would feel better. Or if only that hadn't happened, then I could be at peace. It's easy to get caught in that mode. But what we also do, and it's perhaps more difficult to spot, is the self-judgment and the self-criticism and the kind of pressure that we put upon ourselves. I'll give an example. If supposing there's a job that I've been working in, and it's become clear to me, really, on the inside, that my heart's no longer in it, or it could be a relationship, or whatever, something that it's been a part of your life, but your heart's no longer in it, and that's the truth. And yet, what your mind says about that is, no, but you should carry on. Well, you haven't given it a fair trial, and you've invested a lot of time and energy and money, so don't give up on it. That would be a sign of weakness or something and so on. And it's all of that additional self-negation and thoughts of doubt and thoughts of self-criticism, statements that begin with should and ought to and have to and must. These are often the thoughts which are at a subtle level are creating the what we now experience is a very painful and difficult situation. It looks like the circumstance is creating the pain and the suffering, and it isn't. It's our judgments, not only about the circumstance per se, but about how we are being in relationship to it. This is quite a common thing that I've picked up. What I've noticed is that the moment you're able to tell the truth to yourself, it's always a relief, even if it's a difficult truth. And by a difficult truth, I mean, supposing the truth is, this, it's over, whatever it is. Something's over that you've been deeply committed to or deeply invested in. But actually, that's the truth. It's time to move on. The moment that you actually let that thought in and you give it the kind of airspace that it's been craving, you don't shut it out, the body goes, oh, thank you. And that's the thing to notice. It's just another little clue, is to pay attention to when your body has that, that feeling of thank you. Thank you for acknowledging the truth. Because it's my belief that the body is the truth teller. And it's attempting to reflect that back to us, to reflect back to us what is our inner truth at every moment of our life. And as long as we deny that in some way, or as long as we oppose it, or as long as we resist it, or as long as we add a story to it as to why it can't be true, we get to suffer. We get the feelings of distress and frustration. And again, it looks like something outside of us needs to change before we can relax. And that's not the case. So just something to keep in mind. When you hit on the truth, when you let it in as a possibility, you'll get the sense of relief from that. And that, just letting that in and letting yourself feel the relief, okay, it might bring some tears, there might be some emotional release that goes together with the relief, that's fine too. But that's usually the opening, because you've stopped resisting, you've stopped opposing. Something opens, there's like a new possibilities start to come in now which were not available to you before. So those are the things. I've not answered, those of you who wrote to me by email, I've not answered any of you directly, but I have tried to address some of the things that you sent, let's say, slightly indirectly, and just including them together in that general introduction. Now, I can see that some of you couldn't resist the text, even as I was talking, I just chose to ignore it. So I'm going to have a look now and see, and we can just start to open it up a little bit for discussion and further questions. And Athena, you know, put a question in there. Does that mean if you're in a calm place, you don't feel grief or sadness for losing someone close, even for a short while? No, it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that. If you have a sense of loss, if you have a sense of having lost someone who you're close to, you will have the corresponding feeling of loss, of course. There's nothing inherently unhealthy in that. And it's not something that we have to carry with us for a long period of time. It's not something that we have to dwell on or that we have to revisit or reactivate periodically or regularly. That's something that we might do, but we don't have to. Let's say that's optional. Second point you're asking there, are you saying that if we didn't have this filter, our being would intuitively know what was good for us? Well, it does, yes. And even with this filter, it does. So we don't lose the intuitive knowing about what's good and right for us. It's just that the filter creates interference, which prevents us from knowing with clarity in that moment. So what would be, under ideal conditions, what would be something very straightforward and obvious becomes a very long, convoluted, confusing, difficult decision-making process. But the possibility for the intuitive knowing has not gone away. I don't see how we can ever lose that. And this is something that I've seen when I've worked with people on a one-to-one basis over time, is that a lot of people at the beginning, when I started working with them, have that experience that they feel they can't trust themselves fully anymore. And that's often because of some previous hurt or some previous time when they made a decision and they've made the judgment about it that it turned out to have been the wrong one. So consequently, they're afraid now to do that something similar again. And what I've noticed is that as the thinking gets clear and the person gets clear on the inside, that intuitive capacity naturally starts to inform their life again without them having to make any effort, and it's just something which they naturally trust again without having to work to do that. So once the interference of the mind is out of the way. Natalia, you're mentioning it's similar to Sankaran explanation of the delusion creating personal perceptual distortion. Yes, and things get shifted when that goes away. Absolutely. Those of you who don't know, Sankaran's a homeopath who's developed a way of working based on his understanding that our experience of the world comes out of what he calls a delusion or belief system. So it's an identical observation. The difference, the primary difference being in the response, let's say. So the response from the homeopathic standpoint is that the homeopath is required to, first of all, identify what the delusion is, and then find a corresponding remedy which can help the person to be free of it. So it's another way of working with the content of mind, and it can be very effective. But as I said already, there's no end to the content of personal mind. So my own take on that is that it's a delusion of homeopaths is that there's one remedy, that if you take that remedy, all your problems will go away. That has not been my experience. And I have yet to find a homeopath who can tell me that that's really what happens. You know, you can have a profound shift from one remedy and it can really help in major ways. But that hasn't taken away the delusion-generating capacity that we humans have. So, but it's a good thought, it's a good insight. There is some kind of correspondence there. Okay, now, who else has got, what I'd like to ask if any of you have had anything that you might put in the category of an insight or realization, could be a small thing, could be a big thing, doesn't matter, just something that has maybe hit you or crept up on you since the first weekend, where it's had that quality of a, haha, you know. Is it something that any of you'd like to share? And you can either just type a little bit about it or you can talk about it if you'd like to, and I'll do my best to switch you on, so to speak. Is that a yes, Bernie? Let's see, anybody want to share anything from that that angle? What's that, Athena? You're asking, if I hold that someone's actions are wrong, say Hitler or Stalin, am I merely delusional? Not necessarily, but you are judgmental. It's a value judgment to say that someone's actions are wrong. And it would be easy to say, well, everyone would agree that this person's actions are wrong. But if you take a less extreme example than the ones you've given, we all have people in our lives whose actions we would judge as being wrong, and then we'll recruit people to agree that their actions are wrong. And what that does, it creates suffering for us, and it also prevents us from healing a relationship, for example, and it prevents us from seeing that person for who they really are. All we can see then is our judgments. We see that person through the filter of our judgments, and we lose the ability to be compassionate in that way. So that's the price we pay whenever we get into judgmental thinking. No matter how justified we think it is, what it does, it limits our perception to what we think is right. And it creates suffering for us, because the reality of life is that people are always going to do things that we don't like. People are always going to act, behave, speak, think, etc., etc., in ways that which we think are bad or wrong or they shouldn't be doing. And it's our judgmental thinking about what they're doing that creates our suffering. So, and that's something that we can change. We might not be able to change the other person's behavior, we often can't, but we're always free to change our own perception. Surprisingly, most of us pretend we don't have that freedom. Other questions from anyone? Other thoughts? Anything to share? Yitka, I'm noticing the way my thinking, my judging situation, and the situation by itself are two separate things. This is a great thing to notice. That classifies as an insight in my book. If you're starting to be able to draw a distinction between how something actually is and how you're seeing it, or how you're judging it, which is the same thing, then that's a very significant distinction to be able to make. And that's a signal that, let's say, the trance of external reality is starting to loosen its grip on you a little bit. And that's a great sign. Now, just further to that, I would say that as that insight kind of sinks deeper and deeper, first of all, the fact that you're noticing your judgments are just that. That's all they are. They're judgments about the situation. They are not reality. That starts to kind of unplug you, let's say, from your own ability to get hooked and to get caught in a reactive mode. And that's the first benefit. The second benefit is that after a while, if you're just noticing those judgments rather than being caught in them, they start to also diminish. So it seems that the type of thinking that we have, it seems to be either fueled or fed, shall we say, by the energy we give it, or correspondingly, it seems to diminish by the energy we take away from it. So if you're not adding anything to that, in other words, if you see that it's just your judgment and you don't buy into it, then those judgmental thoughts also start to calm down just by themselves. And that's a great side effect which you can look forward to. Now, Carol, you say, I'm noticing the three principles working beautifully all around me, even in films I've seen, but not so much in me as yet. Okay, so I mean, that's often the way around, is that it's easier to see things outside of us first. I'd say that's normal. Byron Katie says exactly the same with her work. That's why she recommends doing the work on other people, on basically on your thoughts about other people. She says, do it that way around. Don't start with your own thoughts about yourself first, unless you really have to. And this pure and simple reason that she gives for that is it's easier to see. So that's fine. I think that's, you know, that's the playground that we get to learn in. And it's a good starting place. And I think then the next natural progression from that is to just start to see it reflected back inside yourself. It'll happen naturally if you don't push it. Athena is saying, we can choose not to react. I've been significantly less reactive to what others do or say. It's been immensely liberating. And I've noticed I'm much clearer about what I need and want. Yeah. That would be a side effect of realizing how you yourself are creating, consciously or otherwise, and then maintaining a difficult situation. And then actually recognizing that you've got a choice, right? Previously it looked like you didn't. That's a significant shift. Again, even if it's in a small area of life, that's something to pay attention to, and it will start to filter through to other places. Carol, can I come online? Yes, please. That would be wonderful. Let me just attempt this, and I'm really hoping and praying that I don't mess anything up by doing this. So Carol, what I'm going to do is temporarily make you a presenter. So I think I've done that now. Yes, I've elevated your status. So as a presenter, you can now start broadcasting using the little square in the top left of your screen. I'm assuming that's where it is, even though I can't see your screen. You should be able to, if you will just hover over there, you should have an option to switch yourself on. And while Carol's doing that, I'll just read what Dee Dee's wrote. Had a realization moment in the car park at Sainsbury's. That's a good place to have an insight. Just after the first weekend, a thought came into my head. I didn't have a £1 coin for the trolley. I caught myself beating myself up for not having saved one. Okay, yeah. So I just create a bit of unnecessary suffering there. So I noticed myself, got out of the car, walked towards the trolley area. To my joy and amusement, there was one trolley with a pound coin that someone had beautifully left behind. That's nice. I thank the universe in our recent training and realise how this might work in big ways, not just at Sainsbury's. Yes. So that's a really, I mean, that's it's a sweet example there, Dee Dee, of how little things on the outside are accurate reflectors of what's going on for us on the inside. And if you just start to catch them, it seems to me that the more we catch them, the more they happen as well. The more attention that we pay to that dimension, the more it seems to wake up and become activated. But yeah, it's nice when you catch yourself in mid-judgmental thought, choose to let it go, and immediately something on the outside shifts. It doesn't take a long time. That's a great thing. Now, Carol, having any luck? Let's see. No sign of you broadcasting yet. Yeah, I'd love to have you come on and talk to us. Can you just mention by text if you're having any trouble? I'm assuming you can still hear me and that you can still text. Helen, you've mentioned that since the training of noticing and able to let a lot of rubbish thinking and therefore actions go. Now, here's Carol. We'll come back to you, Helen. I can hear you perfectly. I can also see you. So you've got video switched on as well. If you want to switch off video, you can. You see where just underneath this, just underneath the image of yourself, if you just hover over that, that's it, you've done it. But you should still be, yeah, you can still speak now. That's fine. Go ahead, Carol. I can hear you. I'm hoping everyone else can. Okay. That's it. Yep. Yes, that's wonderful. Yeah, I can hear in your voice that there's. Yeah. I think that's great, Carol, and it's great that you've. Go on, keep going. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I think when you get to the place where words can no longer describe it, you're in a good place. That seems to be the, that's the common description that everybody who's touched that place says is, this is where words just fall down, they become inadequate. Well, we have to get poetic in order to be able to put it across. Well, to me, that's the side effect. That's the right way around, is recognizing that the outside world just seems to line up nicely when you're in the flow on the inside. So this is what we call the inside out relationship to life, is recognizing that it is that way around. Your experience of life is generated within you, and then that's reflected out. It's reflected back by events and people and so forth around. Beautiful. Thank you, Carol. Let me switch you off as presenter so we don't take up too much bandwidth there. So that's nice. And just go back to what Helen was writing. You said that you noticed being able to let go a lot of rubbish thinking and rubbish actions. Quite freeing, but initially exhausting. There was so much to notice. Paradox being, I had a momentary glimpse of anxiety I thought was hidden from others. It was consuming in a massive part of life. My question, is this common? And then a shocking glimpse of the opposite. Yeah, I think so. I think I understand what you're saying there. It's like in the midst of feeling much more calm and open, suddenly you start to see the nature of your own mind. It's like you get a glimpse of what it's been up to. And it's a shocker. I think that's exactly right. I can remember having a very similar experience to you, Helen. And I'm guessing that you're probably not the only one, even in this group. It's like when you really catch a glimpse of the workings of your own mind, of the craziness of mind, and you see the consequences in action, being self-created right there and then. It is a shocker. And who in their right mind would do that to themselves? Well, no one in their right mind, of course, but all of us would do that when we're caught in some kind of distortion. But I think that there is that, in a way, it's like when it gets thrown into relief a little bit by having experience to get a little distance from it for a while, or a moment of calm, then it seems even more shocking and compelling when it kicks in again. I think that's normal. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Athena, you mentioned you've noticed others, including strangers, being more loving and open and trusting, and more laughter. These are good side effects. Yeah. Again, they're outside reflecting. Yeah. Yeah, I'm still reflecting on what you've said there, Helen, and we've put the anxiety was just so out of awareness, but feels pretty profound to have noticed. Well, that's the difference. When you're noticing it, you're not quite caught in it. Even if you are to some extent caught in it, you're not, because you're noticing it. So that means that your relationship to it has changed. So, you know, something like that can still show up. We all have the potential to get hooked by certain things. You know, we're all going to get caught left field sometimes. But depending on where you are in yourself, when that happens, it can be something that sends you on a major downer for a period of weeks or decades. Or it can be something that you still get caught in it. You have an emotional reaction, but it becomes something that you get curious about. It's like, oh, wow, I haven't done that for a while. Look at that. Look how mad I am. Look how angry I am, I'm getting, or look how fearful I became. And it's clearly about nothing. There's no danger out there. It's been generated within me. So even while you're feeling the fear in your body, there's some part of you is actually being able to just observe it. So this is good news. It's a good sign. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else have any further things to share? Athena, go ahead. Do you want to speak or do you want to text it? Okay. Athena, you say you've got something to share there. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. You've had a difficult relationship with your sister. Do you want to switch on the talk function, Athena, or Do you want to just text something about it? It's up to you. Okay, so I'll put you as in presenter mode. So if you want to, you can switch on there. Judy, you missed what Carol had to say. Don't worry, it'll be on the recording. Or you guys can speak privately if that works for you. But the record button's still on. So what Carol said would have been on the recording too. Anything else? I like that comment you've just added there, Helen. Rather than doing appreciation with content or something or a task to be done, I just am. Just am appreciating. It's so different. Yeah, that's it. It's not another doing. It's not a task. And it's not something that you have to make an effort about. And I would suggest the same is true of, let's say, the other basic positive human qualities, you know, the qualities of being compassionate and being forgiving and being loving and being appreciative. None of these really are things that we have to work to develop, although there's plenty of workshops available where supposedly you could do just that. But my own take on that is that these are inherent. These are inherent human qualities, and they're part of what just naturally rises to the surface when we're not putting anything in the way, when we're not distracted by some kind of negativity. So again, we put that in the category of nice side effect, positive side effect, where you find that there's natural feeling of appreciation, natural feeling of gratitude, or a natural flow of love or feeling of acceptance. Which comes in all by itself. It's not something that you had to work to generate. That's exactly the kind of side effect that we're talking about. Anything else anybody wants to add? Or ask or comment. I was listening to somebody in the States who works with these principles. She gave a nice analogy, which was to do with this. I think someone had probably asked a question around you know, how come other people seem to be getting it and I'm not getting it, and, you know, what do I have to do to get it, and how long does it take before we start getting it, and so on. And the answer was nice. She said it's a bit like making popcorn. You know, you got the oil's hot and the pan's hot and the corn's ready and you throw it in, and she said you can't predict which ones are going to pop straight away, but some of them will. And some of them you need to stir it around a bit and then they'll start popping. And she said, some of them, you take it off the stove and they'll pop, you know, later on, even when it's no longer on the heat. And there might be a few that still haven't popped yet. And I thought, yeah, that pretty much says it. There's basically, that seems to be the nature of it. There is this kind of, let's say, out of our control aspect to all of this, which I quite like actually, is that the best we can do is just put ourselves in the right space, which I think has to do with is just a certain quality of receptivity, just to be open and receptive and willing to just take it on as a possibility, not necessarily as a belief system or something like that. You just take it on as a possibility and kind of get curious enough about it to start to let it in. And then just look out for evidence that it might be showing up, but without insisting on it, without insisting on anything changing on your schedule, or without insisting on a particular outcome happening. Because it seems that as soon as we attach some investment, as soon as we have some investment in the outcome, that seems to kill the flow of it, which is pretty much what the Buddhists have always been saying. They talk about this thing called the gaining idea in Buddhism. When you have a practice, they say the most important thing is that you do the practice to do the practice for no other reason, not to get anywhere, not to gain anything, not even to gain peace of mind. You just do it. And gradually that kind of doing without attachment to any particular goal or outcome seems to create the right spirit, the right environment, the right mental frame, if you like, that allows things to start happening by themselves. And bear in mind, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about something which is already happening by itself. In that sense, it doesn't need our help. It just needs us to create a little space so that we can notice it. And in that noticing, we can allow it to shift in a more positive direction. It's not, again, we're not making it shift. We're allowing it to shift if it wants to, which it generally does. Okay, anything else from anyone? Seems there's a nice, relatively quiet calm has descended onto the chat board. I like that. Maybe it's a good place for us to wind up for this evening. So we're going to be getting together again. Athena, you just mentioned that you can't get your mic to work. Okay, I'm sorry, but it's just one of those things. Occasionally that happens. And it's just not meant to be in that form right now. Bernie, noticed was ridiculously happy. And then I attached to it, which made me want to hang on to it. Yeah, of course, that's what happens. Yeah, now I feel so good. How do I keep it? How do I make sure I don't go to feeling rubbish again? That's the trap. It's the trap of the mind. And again, at least you've noticed it. You've noticed the result of attaching to it and giving importance to it. So that act of noticing is helpful. And Athena just saying the upshot of sharing something with her resolved family, she was caused a lot of anxiety and is now let go. Great. Glad to hear that. Yeah. Something that needed to be shared was, and that was able to bring a resolution. I'm glad to hear it. And often it's a simple thing that's needed. It's nothing complicated. Okay, my friends, it's been lovely connecting with you here. As I was saying, we're going to be meeting again up in London, just a few weeks' time. Where am I going before then? Croatia and Czech Republic, I think, next week. I don't know if I'll be seeing any of you Czech folks over in Czech Republic. Hope so. If so, that would be nice. I look forward to that. And hopefully all of you, as many of you as possible, will be coming along to London first weekend in December. And let's trust we can get by without any serious technical hitches this time. It should be a little bit easier second time around, and we'll get on to the technical people ahead of time, make sure the room's set up and working. So really look forward to seeing you there. Again, if anything comes up for you in the meantime, if you want to drop me an email, whether it's takes the form of a question or just something you want to share or a topic that you want to raise maybe on the weekend or something like that, if you do drop it in ahead of time, it gives me time to kind of incorporate that and schedule it in. So that's great. You don't have to, but if you if anything does occur to you. Often it's good to catch those things when they pop in and just drop an email. So feel free to do that anytime. Even if I don't answer right away, it probably just means that I'm traveling. But it'll be in there, don't worry. So thank you all. Just a couple of last comments there. Natalia, if I don't make it there, point out what you're showing on the screen. I'll do my best, Natalia. Yeah, I shall certainly do my best. And we as a group will collectively try and make it intelligible for anybody who's going to be watching it subsequently. Didi, you've been in a pickle. You need to go down to Sainsbury's. Disconnecting again and returning to calmness. That's great. And yeah, I'll just leave the chat board open for a little bit if any of you just want to add anything, share anything. But I'm going to bring my little bit to a conclusion here. Thank you all so much. I'm really looking forward to seeing you soon. And it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure connecting with you. And we'll be seeing you shortly. Good night, everyone.